Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden's win, as always, by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to break down what was a very busy month of May in terms of pitcher promotions in the Orioles farm system. Several of their top prospects, as well as some guys that are pushing the major leagues, received a call up to the next level. We're going to break down not just what that has meant in the short run, but what it could mean for the rest of the season and possibly the offseason, as several of these pitchers are Rule 5 eligible. We're also going to shout out players outside the top 30 portion of our top 50 prospects list for their performances later on in this episode. But first, Orioles on the Verge is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for the NBA and NHL playoffs this season. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to our online casino and get in on a game of blackjack or poker, or unwind with one of our over 150 slots games. Head to the website today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code BELIEVE, BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, the game starts here. And now, as I talked about at the top of the episode, we'll break down some of the pitcher promotions we have seen over the last few weeks. And really, if you want to go back into the end of April is when this trend started, when Cameron Weston got the bump up from Aberdeen to Bowie after an excellent run there. But we've seen several others more recently, including Luis De Leon, who is emerging as one of the top pitching prospects in the Orioles farm system, going from Delmarva to Aberdeen. Trey Magoa, after a very good start to the season in Bowie's bullpen, received a promotion to AAA Norfolk. Cade Stroud, who also had a dominant run at Bowie, was promoted to AAA as well. And Brandon Young, who recently got a pretty big shout-out from Eric Longenhagen over at Fangraphs after an excellent stretch at Bowie in their rotation to begin the season, was promoted to AAA. And Young is one of the more intriguing guys we're going to talk about tonight, because not only has his stuff looked as good, if not better, than it has at any point in his career, not only is he getting honorable mention on a top 100 prospects list from a major outlet, but he is Rule 5 eligible this offseason. And now that he's on the cusp of the majors at AAA, he is one of the guys that the Orioles are going to have to make a decision about in the coming months. And that could mean that he's protected with a 40-man roster spot either during the season or in the offseason. Maybe they make him a trade piece, or they just wait and see how things play out the rest of the way. So, Nick, I'll start with you. There's a lot to unpack here, but let's just start with Young's performance so far this season. He's a guy that we've been high on for a while, but unfortunately, injuries have limited him over the last couple of years. This has been his first fully healthy year in a while, and he looks good. What are you seeing from him?
Not going to be one of the trade pieces. There are some we're going to talk about that will be, I think, trade pieces. One that I don't want to see him go, but I think he makes a lot of sense. Brandon Young, and this is just, if anything, for more selfish reasons, just because, like I've said this over and over again, and this warms my heart, that Brandon Young is getting all this love. I could have never imagined Brandon Young becoming this type of pitcher. This is one of my guys. From the moment I watched him pitch, right after the Orioles signed him as an undrafted free agent after that 2020 draft, I was like, this guy, you put him in the bullpen, you let him ride through this organization pretty quickly, you've got something here. But then, like, no one knew what happened to him. He goes in the IL, it was April of 2022, and he doesn't pitch again until June of 2023. And I remember because someone tweeted at us that morning asking, like, where's Brandon Young? And I was like, you know what? I have no idea. I think I texted you guys and was like, do we know anything? We haven't seen a pitch in over a year. You're like, nope, nobody knows anything. And then like 30 minutes later, he popped up on the transaction log, Brandon Young rehab assignment to the FCL. He was back. Now he's got a 41% strikeout rate in Double A, a sub 5% walk rate, a 4.09 ERA, but it was a 1.25 FIP and a 1.66 XFIP. Only one home run allowed in Bowie. And actually, it wasn't in Bowie. It was while he was in Bowie. But it was actually his first start of the year on the road at, was that Colorado? That'd be Hartford? Yeah, Hartford. That's it. So he dominated. He tamed Prince George's Stadium, which is hard to do. And now, like you mentioned, he's in AAA. Eric Longenhagen has him in top 100 consideration. I don't know about you guys, but that blew my mind. I would have never expected to see Brandon Young top 100 consideration. I don't know. This Lance Brozdowski, and bring that up as well. He gave him a really good shout out in his newsletter. And in his write-up, he put some hardcore data behind Brandon Young's numbers here. Brandon Young's got three pitches that have stuff plus above 100. And the slider was at 96 stuff plus. But the slider, he said, had Dean Kramer and Grayson Rodriguez shape. The velo just wasn't there. And if you get the velo up from 84 to 87, and even if it loses some shape, that's a big league weapon. And that gives him four big league weapons with stuff plus over 100. The fastball, 20 inches of induced vertical break, which is elite level hop. And as Brozdowski noted in his newsletter, you don't see fastball characteristics like that from guys his size. And because of that, it's wreaking havoc on hitters. They're not able to hit it, at least at double A level. We'll see what happens when he gets to triple A. He's got a lot to prove at triple A still, but I just think if he holds this velo, he made his triple A debut tonight and was like pumping 95. So if he can hold that velo, I think there's still a lot of development to go there with him, but this is like the pitching version of Joey Ortiz, like the all glove, no bat guy who suddenly, like, now look what he's doing for Milwaukee. But he took that COVID year down at the alt site, and look what the Joey Ortiz, he had the injury, the labrum injury, and now look at the Joey Ortiz we saw return from that. Brandon Young had major league tools, but he gets hurt for a year or so, comes back, and now he's a top 100 prospect. Like, I don't know. I'm happy for it. I hope it pans out and he continues this upward trend now that he's in AAA.
Yeah, completely agree. And I feel like with all these guys, there's like a few different ways it could go, where you either give them a chance this year, you put them on the 40-man before this year ends to give them a shot in the majors and see what they have, and then you can make a decision later, or you keep them in the minors all year and make a decision in the offseason, or like the Rays typically do, you use these guys as your trade chips come the trade deadline, maybe in more minor deals than like a trade for a closer where you'd use someone like Connor Norby. Probably this would probably be more for a role player, but Brandon Young, for me, he's a guy I'd love to see him get a shot in the majors before the year's up out of the bullpen. I mean, just looking at the Orioles 40-man roster, you still have Brian Baker on there. They just got Caleb Ort off of there, Jonathan Heasley, Corbin Martin. Like, there's plenty of guys. Bruce Zimmerman, no offense, Rakabako. There's plenty of guys that, you know, you could make room to give some of these younger, maybe, you know, they don't have the major league experience that a Brian Baker has, but do you want the major league experience that Brian Baker has? I don't know. But yeah, Young, he's been awesome. He's got that. I love reading Lance, and I forgot how to pronounce his last name. I apologize. And I do want to get him on this podcast before the season is over, but I loved reading like just the awkward angle for hitters that Young has, being so tall, but having a lower arm slot than you typically would see with someone that height. And he's got 95 mile per hour heat. Yeah, I think he's a guy that you could see in Baltimore this year, but even if it's not this year, I'd love to see him added to the 40 man at some point. And 2025 maybe is when that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we could see him before the season ends, even if it is a, you know, pits game two of a doubleheader type of situation, just because the Orioles know that if they hold on to Brandon Young, they're going to have to make the move eventually to put him on the 40-man roster. And we saw last year was an example of this, where if a player's performance at AAA warrants it, the Orioles will be proactive and make that move in season and not wait until the offseason. And it's a much different situation because Heston Kjerstad had a much higher prospect stock, or higher prospect status, however you want to term it, coming into this season than Brandon Young, coming into last season than Brandon Young had coming into this season. But I don't know that a lot of us saw Kjerstad making the major leagues last year, and he did, and the Orioles protected him ahead of the offseason. They could very well do that with Young this year. I go back to last season when Young first worked his way back to Bowie. I thought the stuff, especially the fastball, looked good for him coming off an injury, but he would have some starts where he wasn't getting the swings and misses from it, and some starts where maybe he was missing the location. you didn't really see that at all during his time at the Bay Sox this year. And if he's able to build on that to AAA, which is as tough, if not a tougher adjustment than it has ever been before for pitchers, between the different balls, the automatic ball strike zone, the fact that pitches can be challenged on some nights, it's a tough adjustment. But I think he has set himself up to make it, even if it's not right away.
Yeah, you saw some of that too. Just I watched his first three innings tonight before we came on the air. And then now going with that and then looking at the final box score, he still got six strikeouts in, what, four innings in his AAA debut. He did walk three guys. He struggled to find the zone a little bit, but that's, I mean, getting used to the AAA ball. He just got there like 2 days ago. I think it was a really good first start. And to see someone like Eric Longenhagen say, I don't know if this guy holds his velo all year, he might have mid rotation upside. Like that's massive. Even if he doesn't reach that, and this is at least a guy who could compete for a fifth starter spot next year. I think it's good to see him get to AAA right now. And the guy who maybe we'll talk about next, a certain lefty that was just promoted to Norfolk as well. I think getting both of these guys up to AAA now is really good to see. All right, you've got a couple of months if you need it, but let's get both of these guys up to AAA. They're older players. Get them up to AAA and let's see what you got. And if maybe it's okay, maybe there's some promise, we'll trade you. We're going to shop you around and use you to trade piece like Bob was talking about. Or if you start to show out, now the conversation is, how do we fit this guy in the major league roster at the end of the year? Or at least, hey, in Brandon Young's case, because it was a shoulder injury, I think is what eventually we determined, you say, hey, we'll see how many innings you're going to throw this year. But if you pitch well enough this year, like we're going to shut you down maybe a little early and you're not going to get added to the 40-man roster this year. But in the offseason, we're going to add you and you're going to come to spring training in full competition for a rotation spot. And we'll see what happens from there. We'll see. I'd be interested to know how many innings they're willing to give him, though. But they've been pretty cautious with him so far up to this year. I think just a lot of like 3-4 innings. So we'll see.
Let's go over the pitcher that I think Nick was alluding to, and that's Trey Magoo, who started this season back at Bowie and was dominant there in 19 2/3 innings, posting a 1.83 ERA and striking out 24 batters against just six walks. He was promoted to Norfolk, where he has been pretty effective over two outings. And with Magoo, there's a little bit of history to note here, because I'm not sure how many Orioles fans are aware of his full background at this point, even though he's been in the system for a couple of seasons now. Magoo went into the 2022 campaign as a possible option for the Pittsburgh Pirates in their major league rotation later that summer. He was at AAA Indianapolis. He'd had a good track record in the minor leagues up to that point. Gets off to a good start that season, but then is shut down after just eight appearances and ultimately has to undergo Tommy John surgery. He's Rule 5 eligible in the offseason. The Orioles get him in the minor league phase. And while he didn't pitch until last summer, all he has done since he got back on the mound is produce, and that includes in the regular season as well as the Arizona Fall League last year, where he was pretty good. And leading up to last year's Rule 5 draft, I think that was really one of the only prospects that we were seriously considering as an option for the Orioles to protect. Nonetheless, the Orioles left him unprotected, and fortunately, he was not chosen by another team in the Rule 5 draft. He's still in the system, and because of the AAA experience, because of the fact that he has starter experience, he's a little bit different than some of the prospects that might be in the mix for promotions to make their major league debut this year. So, Bob, I'll start with you. If you look at Magoo to this point in the season, do you view him as a viable bullpen option for the major league team later on this year?
I actually lean no. I don't think it's impossible because he's performing well. He doesn't walk many guys, strikes them out. I think this is a guy who I could either see traded or added in the offseason, just because I look at the lefties in the bullpen and it's possible Cionel Perez maybe gets DFA'd at one point. Keegan Aiken gets optioned down. But I also think there's two lefties in the Norfolk bullpen who I think will get a shot before Magoo does. So I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibility. I just think this is going to be a season used, because especially they've been using him. He's a starter long term. I think they probably see him as a starter. He went to the Arizona Fall League, but he's been working in much shorter stints, 1 to 3 innings, and maybe they'll expand that as the season goes on. But I think they have an innings count in mind for him for the season as a whole. So I don't think that will translate exactly to a guy you want, you know, to rely on in your bullpen at some point in a competitive season.
Yeah, it's Brandon Young, Trey Lugo, Kyle Branovich. I think those three guys specifically, and we may or may not talk about Branovich more later on, but I think those three guys specifically, John Mioli's written about them, that they, when they, the three of them were in Bowie, other teams are watching. And that, I think that's, I think he talked to somebody in another organization, some opposing scouts, and they're like, yeah, we got our eyes on this guy. We know they're Rule 5 eligible. I think it's a much more unique situation with some of these guys this year, because they're older pitchers, but they're coming off significant injuries, shoulder injuries, Tommy John surgeries. So you're going to limit them this year, but at the same time, you really got to push them and see what they've got, because these are real options that you could add to the 40-man roster. If you leave them unprotected, they're going to get selected in the Rule 5 draft, like 100% slam dunk, they're gone. Or you trade them, like Bob said. And with Mago, like, I think it's, I'm so high on Brandon Young. Like, I just know. Like, they're all the great pieces, the fan graphs, the Lance article, that it's Mago that is actually the guy that the Orioles are super highest on. That's how this always works out, I feel like. But with Mago, like, he's fully back from Tommy John surgery. He's not walking guys. He gets promoted to AAA. He's got 7 strikeouts to 1 walk. He's given up just 1 run so far, and it was a solo home run to, like, the second batter he faced. He's still pumping 95 from the left side. He throws a lot of strikes. I could see him being the guy where the Orioles say, like, hey, look at this. We took him in the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. He was recovering from Tommy John. We built him back up. Look what he's doing in AAA. You know he could be a starter for you. Let's make a deal. I could see him being moved. And that's a legitimate prospect, I feel like. You're shopping around for a trade.
Yeah, imagine from minor league Rule 5 pick to a key part in a trade for a reliever at the deadline. Maybe like a Connor Norby and Trey Miguel for Ryan Helsley. Let's go.
Or I mentioned technically last episode, if you're watching live 10 minutes ago, that I could see maybe pushing some of those bigger chips in for the bullpen pieces. But like Trey Miguel, I mentioned let's get a Jack Flaherty trade 2.0, but for a better version of Jack Flaherty. Well, who was the Jack Flaherty? That was Drew Rom and Zach Showalter and Cesar Prieto. Like, true or false, Trey Miguel is a better prospect than Drew Rom. I feel like you package him with the right prospects, you can get a higher quality arm, a guy who can really solidify your rotation, or at least be that comfortable 6-7 starter at the major league level for 2 months. Like, I'm comfortable with moving Trey Miguel for a proven starter for that you only need for 2 months. Even if you leave him off the playoff roster, so be it. He got you to that point.
Great point.
I'm of two schools of thought with Miguel. On one hand, I see what you guys are saying. I think it could be an Easton Lucas situation last year where Lucas had performed well, but the Orioles had already passed on not protecting him in the Rule 5 draft once, as they did with Miguel last year. And they might be looking ahead and realize there's this isn't any room for him, but to a bad team, he is an enticing player. I don't think you even necessarily have to be that bad of a team to want Trey Miguel on your major league roster before the season ends. So you dangle him out there, even if it's as a reliever, to get something back. At the same time, though, I'm looking at a left-hander who, age-wise, you know, let's face it, if not for the injury, he probably would have made his major league debut 2 years ago. So you've got a left-hander who's got the stuff to pitch in the major league sooner rather than later. Your bullpen has had a lot of ups and downs this year, and not to put too much emphasis on one player, but Trey Miguel could take Keegan Aiken's spot right now. It might not work over the course of the season, but if Aiken continues to struggle, there's another lefty right there, and not to mention that Aiken has options. You could flip-flop the two, and I just wonder, even though you have Matt Crook ahead of Miguel, because Crook has the 40-man roster spot, you have Bruce Zimmerman. if you want to give someone a longer runway in the major leagues, why not make him a go over one of those two guys?
And, fair point. I mean, like I said, it could be Magoa, the guy the Orioles are higher on, and Brandon Young with that tremendous upside. They're like, hey, you know, he also has a shoulder thing. We're going to move him as far as that piece. And you always talk about like this lineup looks to be trending towards just like nine lefty mashers, but it's not going to be. We know that. But the pitching, like Cole Irvin had a major turnaround. You trade for him, you bring that lefty into Camden Yards. Look at the top pitching prospects in this organization right now. It's Cade Povich, the lefty, dominating. I don't know if we're going to talk more about Luis De Leon, but is there an argument that Luis De Leon is the second best pitching prospect in this organization? Like, or could be by the end of the year? Like, that's a lefty. A lot of these pitchers that are starting to really pop are lefties. I don't know. Conspiracy theory. I like it. Magoa comes up. He's throwing 95 plus from the left side, getting swing and miss, pounding the zone, getting ground balls. It's an enticing option as well at the big leagues right now.
Yeah. Before we move on to Luis De Leon, can we play a quick round of trade 40 man or not? That's not as catchy as I was thinking with this list of pitchers that you gave me before we started, Nick. Is that cool, Zach?
Yeah, let's give a little bit of background on that real quick. We had a question from the listener, Bobby Jones. He wanted to know if we could dig a little bit deeper into the players who are Rule 5 eligible this season, specifically the pitchers. We've touched on Brandon Young and Trey Magoa already, but they're by no means the only pitchers on here. And one of them, Cade Stroud, is a guy that was just promoted recently, so he fits in to the theme of this episode. However, this is a really long list, and some of the names on here might surprise you. Bob, take it away.
All right. So I think Brandon Young, we all think 40 man. Miguel, it's like trade or 40 man. How about Kyle Bronovich, who coming back from Tommy John, velocity is up. I think he learned a new pitch or something too, that article. Like his walks are a little bit high, but that's to be expected coming back from Tommy John. But he looks really good. Double A could be the next guy moved up to Triple A. What do you think, Nick?
That's a tough one just because the walks have bothered me. I feel like this year he's pitching well. He's getting strikeouts. He's got more velo. You mentioned that they revamped the repertoire. I think that's a tough one. I could see him being moved in a deal as well. I mean, he was the guy, again, like Fangraphs list had him as Fangraphs has always been the higher outlet on Bronovich, believing that guy's got back in rotation potential. Even as recently as like a couple months ago, I think they were writing about Bronovich having back of the rotation potential. I think that's a guy who Brandon Young has higher upside. I think Trey Magoa, I feel like, has higher upside. I like Zach's point that could he be a major league piece for you right now? Probably. Bronovich, I feel like it's just a little bit harder to fit in, but he's got major league stuff. I feel like you probably make a Garrett Stallings type trade with Bronovich, maybe.
Yeah, I agree with Nick. I've always looked at Bronovich as he's going to be a big leaguer as long as he stays healthy because he has an out pitch with the knuckle curveball. The velocity increase has been good this year, but like Nick said, I am concerned about the walks. So I think you do see him traded as, or is it more of the Garrett Stallings type move? Or is he the guy that rounds out a package that gets you a higher profile starter or reliever in return?
I'm going to say the walks don't concern me as much just because, like we've seen with Seth Johnson, as the year's gone on, the walks have kind of slowed down. I think he'll be promoted to AAA soon. I think, you know, he was always known for good command, good control before the injury. I think that will get better as the year goes on and the improved stuff, plus that out pitch that Zach said, I think he'll be added to the 40 man before the season is over and pitch out of the Orioles bullpen. That's what I'll say. How about Cade Stroud, who go ahead.
I was going to say with Bronovich, we've seen all these other guys get moved up, Stroud, Young, Magoa before him. Am I thinking too much into it, or is like, why all these other guys are jumping over Bronovich when he was in AAA before he had Tommy John surgery? I just assume like he should. Why is he not back in AAA already? I don't know. Or maybe that's just it's taking him a little bit longer, and I'm thinking way too much into it. But I don't know.
It's a fair point. But Cade Stroud, I was going to say, I did not realize when we recorded the last episode that he had another rough outing tonight in AAA. So maybe he's not as close as I said a day or two ago. But what do we think, Zach?
I think he's going to get major league innings in Baltimore before the season ends. It might not mean much for his long-term status with the organization, but he's someone that the pitch data has always been better than the results. And a large part of that has been because of health and because of walks. He has been dominant for most of this season. And for anyone who's listening to this episode, looking at his stat line, I think it's important to think about what Bob just mentioned, that he had another rough outing because he's had two outings in the last week, one against Wooster and on a night where no one in the Tides pitching staff, other than Brian Baker, pits well. And then he had a tough outing Wednesday night against Gwinnett. So two bad outings in what has otherwise been a dominant year. And the other thing to note with his sample size is that he's a strictly one-inning reliever. He doesn't get the runway that some guys have, like McGough has certainly had this season, where he's going to face more than going to pitch for more than an inning and face more than a handful of batters. He's a one-inning guy. I do think that that maybe limits his upside a little bit in the Orioles' eyes, but the stuff has flashed major league ready at points this year. And I think he's going to get some taste in the majors before the season's over.
I will say that this team makes bullpen moves. McDermott fills the role as well. And Stroud, I don't know. Maybe you take the gamble again. Maybe we're not seeing that many Rule 5 guys get picked. And so I feel like if I'm a team, again, I don't work in baseball. I just podcast about baseball. So it's like, but I feel like if I was in that position and I'm going after a guy, that I would want a Bronovich, Brandon Young, Trey McGough type arm to select out of the Rule 5 draft, because that guy gives you the stuff, can play up in 1-2 inning stints as we work through this Rule 5 roster requirements. And then there's long-term projection there. There's potential for them to maybe become a starter down the road. But like Zach mentioned, there's no projection with Stroud as far as starter. Like, he is a one-inning guy. Maybe you roll the dice and say, if he's not on the major league roster, you roll the dice and say, we'll leave him unprotected again, because they did it last year and he didn't get selected. But
yeah, I agree with that. I think it's up to the Orioles, obviously, like what they think about his development in AAA over the next month or so. But I think either he'll get a shot in the majors this year, or I don't think he's a trade guy. I think he's a guy, like Nick said, you roll the dice. And even if he's taken in the Rule 5 draft this offseason, we've seen him implode at times. Maybe he comes back at some point, even if he gets picked. But I think there's a couple more worth going into depth about before we go into like speed round, but a couple of younger guys, international guys, Edgar Portes and Moises Chace. What if we tackle this one together between those two high upside young? I think they're like 20 years old, maybe 21. Nick,
this was shocking. First of all,
hats off to Chace. Glad he's okay after that scary collision at first base.
Yeah, that was, I hate to say I'm glad it was only a concussion, but considering he was like motionless for like 5-10 minutes there next to first base, scary. So glad to see he'll hopefully be back soon. I was shocked to see both of these guys on the Rule 5 list already. When we look deeper into it, I don't see them at risk of being selected, even though Chace is getting all the pub. He's in Baseball America articles like multiple times a week, I feel like, up to this point. And Portes, he doesn't have the stuff that Baumeister and Levi Wells probably do. But as far as Aberdeen pitchers go, he's statistically arguably like the second best arm in that Aberdeen rotation behind Chace. I don't know. This one's tricky because I don't see a team drafting a 20-year-old in Chace who's got the walk issues. That's still a big thing. As dominant as he has been, he does still have outings. It's been much better, but he does still have those blow-up outings. So a 20-year-old with control issues in high A, who could be out another month before he's back in Aberdeen's rotation full-time. Hopefully not, but he's going to miss a chunk of time now. I think that helps the Rule 5 case. You keep him in high A all year, he's safe. Portes, though, like, I don't know if it's a situation where Baumeister and Levi Wells are college guys, so you jump them up to Bowie when they're ready, and you leave Portes in high A, maybe hide him a little bit more. But even if he gets to double A, he's a younger arm as well that I could see teams having a hard time maybe digging that deep for a guy. I don't know.
I agree with Nick. As much as I like both of these pitchers and as much as I think that both of them have a tremendous amount of upside, Portes is going to turn 22 in October, and best case scenario probably will have half a season of double A experience. I just don't see that really appealing to a team. And then in Sase's case, he's going to turn 21 here in a couple of weeks. So he'll be 21 on opening day next year. And this injury is not going to be a long-term setback, but it is going to keep him out enough time. It's really going to limit his opportunity in double A this year. He might still get there, but this is going to mean probably at least three or four starts fewer at that level than he would have had otherwise. And the Rule 5 draft presents so many high floor older guys for pitchers in the major league phase that I think it's going to be hard to pass up on someone who could help your bullpen now for one of these two pitchers, no matter how good they could be. And I think both of them could be very good, but there's a lot of development left for both of them. Chase, it's the walks. Portes has come a long way in the last year, but I think that with his secondaries, there's still some more consistency to be had. So I think that you can probably afford to not protect them in the offseason, and you'll have both of them in your system going into next year.
Yeah, I think I pretty much agree with you guys here. Chase, yeah, I think you don't need to protect him. You don't need to trade him. If a team takes him in the Rule 5 draft, I think he'll probably walk like 20% of batters in the major leagues next year. And that's not a shot at him. I mean, that's just, he's super young and that's a big jump. Portes, I could see if he has a nice second half that going into the offseason before the 40-man deadline, maybe if a team falls in love with him, that could be a trade potential there. But other than that, yeah, I agree. And I'll just run down real quick. Nolan Hoffman.
I think he's in Norfolk's bullpen for the rest of the year. Not really a factor in the Rule 5 conversation in the offseason.
Yeah, he looked a lot of fun last spring, but I don't think that side-winding, underarming delivery is working out too well this year. But
agreed, but I think the Rays at one point will get him and turn him into a weapon. Ryan Watson?
He hasn't
got more run in the Norfolk bullpen. I defended him last year, even though he struggled for good reason. We defended him because the stuff still looked good. I'm shocked at the way they've handled him this year, considering some of the guys that have been running out there in AAA.
Yeah, like, why did he spend the first month plus of the season on the development list? Was he working through something? Were they tinkering with something? Or was it, we want to keep you around, we just don't want to get rid of you right now, but like, we don't feel like you're ready to throw a bunch of innings in Norfolk's bullpen right now for us, for whatever reason. I don't know. It's definitely questionable. This guy just won the year before last Orioles minor league pitcher of the year honors. So it's I guess wait and see with Watson. Let's see how the rest of this year goes. I don't see him like getting picked in the Rule 5 draft. I don't think the Orioles are going to protect him either, but
I kind of agree. And it's been interesting to see that it's been a lot of short outings for Watson to this point in the season, when in the past, or at least the last couple of years, he's worked as a starter or a long man out of the bullpen. That hasn't really been the case this year. So would I rule out a turnaround before the season ends? Absolutely not, but let's just wait and see.
Yeah, I think Houston Roths is an easy no being added to the 40-man, but he does intrigue me as a bullpen arm. He's been pretty interesting this year, striking out a lot of batters out of Bowie's bullpen.
Numbers aren't bad. I mean, what is this, 32.9% strikeout rate? Like, yeah, he's walking some guys, but that's a lot of strikeouts. He's 26 years old, and I feel like these guys, 26 years old out of Ole Miss, like college arm. I feel like a lot of these guys by now, you just kind of move on from them, but he's still kicking around. I don't know. I think they like him and want to keep him in this organization, at least as long as they can.
He feels like one of those players that a few months from now, we're going to be talking about, oh, look at his stats in the Arizona Fall League. is there a conversation to be had here about him being protected in the Rule 5 draft? He's always been solid organizational depth, and I think he's having the best season of his career to this point. But as Nick said, 26-year-old college guy, typically you would think that if he's not in AAA by now, you would have moved on.
Yeah, agreed. Zach Peak, obviously we love the guy. He's got great stuff, just unfortunately just cannot stay healthy. I think that takes him off of the 40-man thing. Same with Gene Pinto, I think. Both of those guys probably not protected.
No, and you can protect them on the minor league side so they don't – there's Gene Pinto doesn't turn into somebody else's – or Zach Peak. Neither of them turn into somebody else's Trey Mago. But, yeah, as far as major league phase goes, just get healthy, yeah, both these guys. Agree.
And lastly, Luis Gonzalez, who I'm interested in. I think I'll kick it off. I think he will get a shot with the Orioles this year and add it to the 40-man, whether he survives it to the end of the season. Now, that's another story. But to me, and I'll just cross him off my final segment list here and talk about him now. He's a guy who, 32 years old, he's Albert Suarez, but a left-handed pitcher. Lefty version of Albert Suarez for me, because his FIP is 2.20, which his ERA in AAA is 3.27. Over his last... let's see, since April 30th, covering 13 and a third innings, that is 10 outings, he has a 1.32 ERA, 19 strikeouts, one walk. So to me, he's just a guy that can get strikeouts and doesn't walk people. I think that could help, especially in the bullpen. It feels me, Keegan Aiken optioned Luis Gonzalez. You cleared Caleb Ort, put him on the 40-man, give him a shot.
I like it. I think there's a reason Mike Elias and this organization went out and signed a 32-year-old arm who's been pitching in Mexico and Italy and the Dominican and every country but the U.S. over the last, what, 4 years or so, 3 years, 4 years. There's a reason they went out and brought him back to the organization. And it's, I think he deserves a shot as well. He's been pitching very quietly under the radar. You know, people look at Norfolk and say, yeah, Povich is pitching well, McDermott's pitching well, but like, it's a disaster down in Norfolk. You look, there are some relief arms, Luis Gonzalez included, that are actually pitching pretty well that deserve a shot. And I know Bob's going to talk about another one later. There are some guys who I think are super intriguing and just getting no notoriety whatsoever. They may not work out. They may come up and be Thiago Vera when they get their shot, but like, they deserve a shot at least.
I agree. I see Gonzalez at a minimum being in the same category that I put Cade Stroud, which is you've got to give him a shot at some point just to see what he can give you, even if you don't see him as part of the long-term plans. But yeah, I think you're going to see him on in the bullpen before the year is over. We'll go now. Before we get to our final segment, I do want to talk quickly about two guys that have been promoted within the last month, neither of which is Rule 5 eligible for a while out, so they're not part of the last conversation that we just had, but it's Luis De Leon and Cameron Weston. De Leon, Nick touched on this earlier, arguably now one of the top pitching prospects in the organization. He went back to Delmarva after pretty much dominating low A hitters last year with seemingly only one thing to improve, and that was his command. And he more than answered that with a really strong run at Delmarva before getting promoted to Aberdeen. And really outside of one bad inning for the Iron Birds in his first start, he has been really effective at high A. And friend of the show, John Mioli, just profiled De Leon recently in his series about minor league pitchers over at the Baltimore Banner. And it revealed a lot to me that I did not know about De Leon, that he's throwing a four-seam fastball and a two-seam fastball. The pitch mix is a little bit deeper than we realize. It's not necessarily slider and changeup. And that the changeup in particular has really, really strong pitch data behind it. So, Nick, because you brought it up, I'm going to go back to you for this one. Just how high is De Leon's ceiling?
20 inches on a changeup.
Yeah, like that's it. I've said this over and over again with De Leon. Whenever we talk about De Leon, it's a lefty as what, a 19-year-old, he was throwing 95, 96 from the left side, and he had that great feel for multiple secondary pitches. But it's like John Mioli's data, like that's, there's a reason he has good feel for that changeup. It's a changeup that no one else throws. 20 inches of horizontal run, which, as John Mioli said, no one in Major League Baseball, that pitch doesn't exist in Major League Baseball right now. That is absurd. It's good. He's good overall. Like that's why I pose the question. Like, is there an argument to be had that De Leon is, I think all three of us have Povich as our top guy. I think all of us have McDermott as number two, but then it's like McDermott, Seth Johnson, Baumeister, like that range. Is there an argument for Luis De Leon to be the second best pitching prospect in this organization? Depends on like how you value these guys, but I think ceiling wise, he's certainly up there, like top two or three in the organization.
We traded D.L. Hall and got a better D.L. Hall from international signing, basically. Yeah, I think that's definitely an argument you can make, especially by the end of the season. I mean, I think there's a chance he gets a taste at Double A before the season ends. I mean, I think it would be towards the tail end, but tail end of his 20-inch changeup fade. Just ridiculous numbers. And I think, yeah, he's still so young. So just give him a chance to get a feel, pitch in Aberdeen for most of the season. And man, yeah, the sky's the limit for Luis De Leon. I think I was already super excited for him. And then to see that John Mioli article, it was just like, be still in my heart.
Yeah, I do wonder though, how many innings we're going to see out of him this year, because he pitched 28 innings in 2022, which was his debut in the DSL. He went 53 innings last year, and he's already up to 35 this year. So he could be at his career high this month. So I do, and they shut him down early last year. I feel like they've been really cautious with him this year. Even there were a couple of outings where it's like, why is he only going three or two? He's at like 30 pitches. They're taking him out. I think they're going to be really cautious with him for whatever reason. So we'll see how long he lasts. And the best part about De Leon, I don't know if John mentioned this in his article or not, but like his signing bonus, wasn't it only like 10 or 20 grand? Like this guy signed for pennies, literal pennies.
Like an extension candidate. Pre-arb.
Exactly. Like this guy signed for nothing. No one else wanted him. That's some good scouting by these international guys.
Scouting and player development. It's what we do. Yeah, I think right around 100 innings, I would expect probably for the year. So probably not going to see many five inning stints for him, appearances for him this year, but that's okay.
Yeah, I think that they are going to play it conservative with him, and I'm perfectly fine with that. We have seen him come out of the bullpen in Aberdeen, which I think tells us how they plan on using him. He'll probably start some nights being a piggyback role, other nights, but it's a good way to manage his innings. He's young, as Bob mentioned, only 21. He's got a long way to go in his development, but his potential is so high that you want to take it as slow as you can. Right now, I have him ranked fourth among pitchers on my list. The only guys ahead of him are Cade Povich, Chase McDermott, Jackson Baumeister, and Seth Johnson. There is an argument to be made that De Leon's ceiling is higher than all of them. He's probably the furthest away from the big leagues in some respect. I think certainly further away than Povich, McDermott, and Johnson are, and maybe Baumeister. But the stuff, when you look at it across those four pitchers, De Leon is just different. And it's not a slight on any of those other three pitchers who are really good, but it's just there are not a lot of left-handers in baseball like Luis De Leon, who throw hard, who have that kind of changeup, who have two different fastballs they can use to attack hitters. There just aren't a lot of pitchers like that with the ability to start. And I right now, from what I'm seeing, I think De Leon can stick as a starter.
Oh, 100%. And you're right. He's different. I predict he will be, and I'm not counting Cade Povich in this, but I think he'll be the next pitcher prospect that is a top 100 in all of baseball in about a year's time. I could easily see that happening.
Let's go now to Cameron Weston, who after an injury debuted or had his full season debut with Aberdeen last year, started late and was one of the Ironbirds' better pitchers down the stretch. He went back there to begin this season and dominated over four starts before being promoted to Bowie, where he's arguably been a little bit better. If you look at his numbers, his strikeout rate is about the same as it was in Aberdeen, but the walk rate is down by quite a bit. Meanwhile, the ERA is sitting at a pretty solid 2.37. The xFIP is lower at AA than it was at high A, 3.21 compared to 3.52. And so far, he's had more innings at Bowie, 19, than he had at Aberdeen to start this season, where he logged 16 2/3 innings pitched. Weston is a guy that typically gets more credit for his secondaries than his fastball because he's a right-hander who doesn't have premium velocity, but he's got a good mix of secondary pitches. His changeup looks particularly good most nights that have a lot of movement on them. But I contended on an episode about a month ago that I think the fastball is an underrated pitch. Yes, it's not, it doesn't have premium velocity, but it's got really good late movement in the zone. And when he's on, hitters really don't square up on it. So, Bob, I'll start with you. Weston has had a remarkable year to this point. What are you seeing, and what do you think that it has done for him with his long-term prospect status in this organization?
Yeah, no doubt. He's this year's Alex Pham. Obviously, we had a higher opinion of him coming into this season than we did of Pham coming into last season, I would say, but he's gone from a guy who I thought could be like a legitimate, like high leverage relief prospect to now it's like, well, maybe he can make it work as a starter because he's doing some things. Like you said, the fastball looks a little bit better than it did in the past. The changeup is a weapon. He's just pitching, like mixing his pitches and all that really well. I think, you know, he could be in that Kyle Branovich pre-Tommy John surgery, like part where he's like a back end innings eater if he's a starter. But if he's a reliever, again, like I could see him being a high leverage, not high velocity, but a high leverage arm in a way that I don't know, just gives a different look. You know, like Cano is a sidearm and sinker baller, Colomb is a lefty with ridiculous pitches, and I think a guy like Weston would fit in really well as far as just giving different looks out of a bullpen. But I'm certainly not giving up on his chances to make it as a starter, especially after the start that he's had.
He's probably the him and Edgar Portes, I feel like, are in a battle between being the best pitching prospect that no one talks about in this system. Like, got promoted to Bowie. It's 19 innings, 24 strikeouts, 4 walks. That's insane. He just hasn't pitched. I was going to say, like, what does he have to do to get more notoriety? But he just hasn't pitched much. It was because of the injuries. 42 innings last year. He's up to, like, what, 35 or so this year. And since getting to Bowie, the strikeouts are up. The walks are way down. He's at a 5% walk rate. It was 11.7% in high A this year. Strikeout rate, 31%, 31%. The big thing that sticks out is like he's not getting the ground balls as much anymore. This guy was like career up to this point, like 55, 56% ground ball rate. It's down to 47%. That's like the biggest blemish. Everything else has been improved since he got to Bowie. And he's another guy who I don't think you're going to see a ton of innings from him this year. He's probably going to stick in that piggyback role. I could see him, if depending on how things shake out the AAA level, which I think you're going to see a lot of movement over the next couple of months, I could easily see Weston getting that cup of coffee at the end of the year in AAA, and then next year, like, battling. He's in AAA to start the year. He's probably in Norfolk's rotation, and he's a guy that's who's battling, and you're like, man, that guy could be a potential weapon out of the bullpen at the end of, you know, 2025 season, maybe. I'm watching him closely. I love watching this guy pitch. It's interesting comments when people have never seen him pitch. I feel like there's been three different comments already this year. It's like, that's Tommy John surgery waiting to happen because of his weird delivery, and that everyone else has to make that comment. No, the kid's good, and he's got that funky delivery that just eats hitters up. It's fun to watch.
Completely agree. And with that, we will go into our final segment of the night where we shout out players outside the top 30 portion of our top 50 prospect list for something they've done recently, whether it's been a good game, a good week, or just something interesting in their stat line. And since his reliever pick kind of fits into the theme of this episode. And in fact, he's been mentioned a few times already. I'll turn it over to Bob.
Matt Crook, is that who we're talking about here?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Matt Crook, he has been stealing outs from hitters all season in AAA. I'm just trying to pull up his overall stats real quick. Yeah, 1.50 ERA on the season, 18 innings pitched, 21 strikeouts, 10 walks, which is a little high, but I feel like most of the walks happened in the first month of the season. If you go back after his second appearance in early April, since April 9th, he's pitched 15 innings to a 0.60 ERA, 17 strikeouts to 9 walks. And then if you go even shorter from now, his last five appearances, he's pitched 5 1/3, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, no runs allowed. So to me, I'm not sure if he's like new Nick Vespi or if he's like a guy they think could be a weapon, or like new Danny Coulomb or new Nick Vespi. Obviously, we love Nick Vespi. He dominates minor league hitters. He hasn't really had a chance to prove if he can do it at the major league level. So I think we know where the organization stands with him. But yeah, I just wanted to shout out Matt Crook. He's already on the 40 man, so very easy to give him a shot at some point this season, especially swap him with Keegan Aiken. If you want to give Aiken a chance to get right back down in AAA, I could easily see that happening. What do you guys think?
I think, like we talked about, I think this is a guy who definitely deserves a shot. If even if it's just one of the churn and burn guys, that's like he comes up and if he craps the bed, he craps the bed. It's what you DFA him, you move on. It's fine. You don't lose anything. But if he does click, like maybe he has something. That's a guy who I watch a lot of, obviously watch a lot of Norfolk Tides baseball. And he's always a guy who I'm just like, Matt Crookson, like maybe I like skip a little faster if I'm not watching live, like skip a little faster, whatever. I don't pay attention. And then like I'm preparing for the show and I'm looking up for this segment. Yeah. And I'm like, oh wow, he was actually really good. Maybe I should stop skipping through his outings and actually watch him a little bit harder. It was a good find.
Yeah. He's going to get a shot at some point, I think. And his performance warrants it.
And it's going to be especially sweet since he was with the Yankees last year. And for my hitter, I'm going to go with the guy I've talked about a lot last year, especially Steven Acevedo, who got off to a really slow start this year. Then he went on the injured list. And ever since he's came back, he's been just killing the ball in low A Delmarva. I would not be surprised if high A Aberdeen is in his future as soon as they think guys like Bradfield and Matthew Etzel deserve to be promoted to double A. For the season, he's batting .281 with a .787 OPS, 6 doubles, 3 home runs, 13 stolen bases. And over his last, 18 games, 57 at-bats, obviously with the injury there. We're going all the way back to April 20th, so it's been over a month, but with the injury, it's not a ton of at-bats. But he is batting .351 with a .966 OPS in that span, 175 WRC+, 9.4% walk rate, which is very much increased from last year, and an 18.8% strikeout rate, which is much better than his 30% strikeout rate last year. Overall, it's 26.4. So he's making strides and he's still only 21 years old, believe it or not, since he's been in this organization for 4 or 5 years now. So just wanted to continue to shout him out as he continues to go under the radar.
I like it. I'm going... Can we also just shout out the fact that I feel like whenever we do this segment, at least my guys, the next week, they're not good. And like we're digging deep for these guys. So, of course, like they've got holes or whatever. But it's like, why you got to do this to us? But Daniel Johnson crushed it again this past week, hit .500 for the Tides. And we did a full episode on Matthew Etzel and Enrique Bradfield. And they continued to rake this past week for Aberdeen. So, thank you guys for finally following through after we talk about you guys. I'm going to go down to the FCL. I don't know if we've done that with guys. Very rarely do we go down to the FCL, even though they just started. But I wanted to talk real quick about Ellis Cuevas, just because he's one of like, seems like 15 of these sub 6 foot switch hitting middle infielders that the Orioles have stockpiled in these last couple of international signing classes. But even like Aaron Estrada is leading the way, hit up opposite field home run just the other day, which is really cool to see. But Cuevas is another one of these guys in that same mold as Aaron Estrada. 5-for-10 last week with a home run. I believe it was a walk-off home run as well. Two walks, two stolen bases, 855 OPS, 128, or he had a 855 OPS and 128 WRC plus in the DSL last year. In the FCL this year, he's got a 926 OPS. He's already matched this home run total of 2 in 16 games this year. He hit 2 in 54 games last year, so power's up. The walk rate is up from 10% to 14%. The strikeout rate is down from 19% to 15%. We talk about that a lot with these younger guys who we don't have eyes on. And he's got a 146 WRC plus. So I'm liking what I'm seeing out of Ellis Cuevas from the bat. And then on the mound, my under the radar shout out this week is Bradley Bremer. I don't know if we've ever mentioned his name on this podcast yet, but he was a 12th round pick out of Indiana last 2022, when the Orioles just clearly loved Indiana Hoosier baseball because they took Reese Sharpe as well in that draft. But Bremer was okay last year in Delmarva, fine. Gets the bump up to Aberdeen, and I really wasn't expecting much, to be honest, but he's worked exclusively out of the bullpen. He pitched 3 2/3 scoreless innings last week with 2 hits allowed, 3 strikeouts. And in 20 innings this season, he's got a 2.18 ERA, 192 average against, 24 strikeouts in 20 innings pitched as a reliever for Aberdeen. So just a guy who we always talk about Aberdeen's pitching and so many guys lighting it up on a nightly basis, while Bremer just very quietly does his thing out of the bullpen. Good to see.
Good choices. Go ahead, Bob.
Oh, I was just going to say great choices as well. And maybe we'll get some Dominican Summer League shout outs coming up because their season starts on Monday, June 3rd.
Nice. I'll start off with my hitter, who is Aaron Estrada. Estrada has rebounded from a really rough month to begin the season and absolutely has torn the cover off the ball in the month of May. And he showed that recently, including on Tuesday when he went 3-for-5 at the plate with an opposite field home run. It was the second straight game in which he homered. And the big thing with Estrada is that line drive stroke. I remember back in 2022 when he had that big season in Dominican Summer League and was starting to get a lot of notice from us that from the little bit of video that we could get of him that summer, he had this really nice, compact line drive stroke that allowed him to get the most out of a pretty small frame. He's listed at 5'8", 142. He has been listed at that his whole career. I'm not sure if it's accurate anymore. That gives you the sense that he's a smaller guy. Last year in the FCL, the ground ball rate went way up. His numbers weren't as good. Despite that, the Orioles promoted him to Delmarva this season. As I mentioned, April was a really bad month for him, but he's managed to completely turn the page in May. And the big key is that the line drives are back up. Line drive rate entering Wednesday of just over 18%. Meanwhile, the ground ball rate was at 60%. Last year has been slashed down to just under 54%. And here's another stat I love. He's hitting the ball and pulling the ball at about the same rate. So that all field stroke is back for him. That has been good to see. And even as a switch hitter, he can take advantage of the opposite field, which he did against Carolina on Tuesday night, batting left-handed, hit a home run off the video board in left center field. So that line drive stroke is back. The big blemish right now is that his walk rate sits at around 5%. You want to see that number go up, but given he's made adjustments so far at this point in the season, I'm hopeful he will improve in that area as well. And then for my pitcher, I'm sticking with Delmarva. I'm going with Isel Correa. Correa is a young right-hander, 21 years old. The Orioles signed out of Cuba before the 2023 season. Last year, Correa got off to an excellent start in Dominican Summer League, was promoted to the FCL, and really struggled there. This year, he went back to the FCL, and after just one outing, was promoted to Delmarva. And if you only watched his first start with the Shorebirds, you probably didn't come away impressed because he struck out 4 guys in 4 innings of work, walked 4 batters, and 4 innings of work with only 1 strikeout. His last 2 outings since then have been a lot better. Combined 9 2/3 innings pitched with 11 strikeouts against 4 walks. So far this season, he's had very good numbers over a small sample size between the two levels. A 0.96 ERA with 15 strikeouts to 8 walks over 13 over 18 and two-thirds innings pitched. So Correa, still really young at this point, just 53 and a third career innings, but showing a lot during his first stint in Delmarva.
Yeah, watch his last outing. I watched it this morning. I had it on the background when I was working. I don't know how many hits he allowed yesterday, but like four maybe. They were all like ground ball, weak ground balls through the infield. No hard contact. It was a lot of, I don't think he's a high velo guy, but I think he's like 90, 92 or something. But that guy is, he's pretty polished for as young as he is, as far as development wise. I think he had some issues coming out of Cuba and that delayed his entrance into the U.S., and which is why there was that really emotional video of him signing when he found out that the Orioles were signing him. It was a big relief for him, obviously, and he's pitching fairly well. I think he might be in my new top 50 that comes out, or at least very, very close. We'll see.
Yeah, great choices, especially Aaron Estrada. I feel like he's one of my guys, our guys. Frederick Bencosme, reminiscences, just a switch hitter. The ops field home run surprised me. I didn't know he had that kind of power, so maybe he has grown a little bit. So I'm very happy that he's having a good month, and hopefully that continues this season.
And Nick's mention of his personal top 50 is a good reminder that our monthly update to the top 50 prospect list is going to drop next week exclusively for patrons. You're not going to want to miss that. If you're not a member of our Patreon community yet, please check it out and sign up today. You can sign up for as little as $3 a month, and at the $5 and $10 levels, have access to bonus daily coverage from Bob, Nick, and myself of the Orioles minor leagues. Not only can you find us on Patreon, but you can find us on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Instagram, Threads, X, TikTok, and YouTube. We're also at Substack, OriolesOnTheBirds.substack.com. We've had coverage of the Orioles minor leagues as well as the draft throughout the spring. We look forward to bringing you more there over at Substack. We will be back next week. In the meantime, hope you enjoy the rest of your week. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, presented by Bet Online and part of the Believe Podcast Network.